You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're charting our course deeper into the expanse. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, the hopeful bromantic. And yes, that was a Star Trek Enterprise reference in a podcast episode about the sci-fi series The Expanse. The reason I did that is, you know, it's a nice little in-joke for all of you actual Star Trek Enterprise fans there. Seasons 3 and 4, I particularly liked very much. Manny Koto, thank you for your contributions. Not that Manny Koto's listening to this show, but maybe one day. Maybe one day. He is a Zack Snyder fan. And also, because we are doing a side series, a mini series, however you want to call it, about Season 5 of The Expanse. This episode is for Season 5, Episode 1. Season 5, Episode 1. Oh, I just saw William post in the Discord. I got very confused. Very confused. Very distracted. I'm like a cat with a laser pointer here. You just... things pop up, I hear noises, I look, I get distracted. This is why Adam always gets mad at Dr. Drew on his show for looking at his phone. But yeah, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 1. I don't know how much I personally am going to have to say about it, but that's why I have my co-host. So why don't we bring him in? Joining me this trip from Dale's Lawn, possibly a bigger science fiction fan than me, than I am would be proper grammar. William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, that's right. I got this drop.
You sure this isn't personal?
You're damn right it's personal.
That's right, everyone. We get to talk about The Expanse. I'm super excited about this. So, yeah. Season...
she definitely had her moment in the episode, but for me in that scene, it wasn't, she didn't even have the best moment in that scene. So sorry That's to interrupt. True. I just That's wanted true. To say that.
So Season 5, Episode 1. So we get to catch up with, the crew of the Rossi. They're kind of spreading out for whatever reason. They got some shit to take care of after saving the world two times in a row. Or at least two times in a row.
And then saving that random planet.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, we open up with Holden, and we have Naomi, and Naomi is helping repair the ship. She finds out that from Fred Johnson that she's got the location of her son, which is a big plot point that we saw in earlier seasons. Then we move on into Holden getting a little visit from the reporter lady. I forgot her name, but says she's snooping around and finds out that there's a research base being started to do research on the protomolecule. This is interesting. So what does Holden do? Of course, barges.
You're saying the reporter lady from the planet, the Stargate SG-1 planet,
exactly.
From season 4, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And so then we go in and we barge into Fred Johnson's office. He doesn't deny that he still has the protomolecule. I won't spoil later things in the season. But we have a nice discussion. We have a good moment with Fred, right? A good moment with Fred. And then Holden comes back and finds out that Naomi knows where her son is and that she's going to go by herself. So this means that Holden's going to be by himself for a little bit, at least, right? Naomi's going to be gone. We start to follow what the rest of the Rossi crew are doing, and kind of fast forwarding to the end of the episode, we find out that, oh, I forgot to mention the opening action sequence is really important, right? We find out that Marco Naris's crew is destroying the science station, and we start to unfold. People are starting to dig around and find out what's going on with that. We have the investigation on Mars, figuring out who's buying these weapons and where are they going. And then we see that Avasarala is a little bit sidelined, right? She's basically the head of immigration on the moon, basically. And kind of sidelined. And but we do have a great moment with her and I'm blanking on his name. Muscles. We have a nice moment with him. And I love the dialogue. Amos? There. What?
Amos?
Amos, sorry. We have a nice dialogue with Amos. I love that dialogue there, by the way. Like, the whole Amos character arc, I want to get into that in a second. But, so Justin, what are your... Oh, sorry, and we leave the episode with... Oh, I've already forgot where exactly we are. I don't want to spoil the next episode, but we leave the episode with Amos is going to Earth with a little bit of discontent on Mars, and then with this question mark about what's going to happen with these asteroids. Like, they're clearly heading to Earth, so what's going to happen with those? We get a little cliffhanger at the end of episode one. So, Justin, what are your thoughts overall on the first episode?
Okay, so my thoughts are exactly what happened while you were talking to me and explaining to the audience, you know, what happened in the episode. And I don't think this is necessarily the fault of the show writers or the showrunners or the actors or anything, but I just feel lost. I feel lost. And, you know, I sort of felt this way at the beginning of other seasons. They drop you in to what's going on without much prefacing, without any prefacing. And I just don't know what's going on. I know the crew's separated. I know there are things that are happening, but I can't remember because right now it all feels so disjointed. Mm. What I liked about The Expanse over the first three seasons is everything fit together and it had a purpose. Now, in the first season, it was very mystery driven. It was, where is this all going? But it was all built around, you know, the Expanse and the protomolecule and Julie, what was her name?
Julie Mao.
Mao, okay. I'm glad you said that because I was thinking Chan in my head and that felt super racist. No, Julie Mao, right? So it was all sort of integrated around that. But now everyone seems to be going in disparate directions, and it's hard for me to keep track of it because when I'm paying attention to a story and there's nothing integrating it, I don't remember it. I don't remember it. I don't know anything. Like,
well, I don't want to spoil anything for you, Justin, but every plot line in this beginning is integrated. But I think because of the theme of this season, that this is a little more purposeful, having this sort of disjointed, and it's challenging. I'm not going to say they did it perfectly. It's challenging to cover this many threads and have them weave together at the end, right? But I think they're trying to start these separate threads and show how they will come together.
Yeah, and I get a sense of that. There were some quotes I put in the Discord Expanse Watch Party channel that I think point to that theme that you're talking about. And that's why I also don't hold the showrunners accountable, because this is based on a book. And I get the sense that it's that way. I mean, this is what... and this is probably a high compliment for a lot of people, but this is what the early seasons, especially season one of Game of Thrones, was like for me. Where when I watched the first season of Game of Thrones, I stopped partway through it because it wasn't integrated. It was very disconnected, and each episode just, it didn't feel like it was going anywhere. But when I realized that it was supposed to be chapters, like reading a book, rather than episodes, which are independent stories, which then build to a larger story, it made Game of Thrones make sense to me.
Yeah.
So I think that in a post-Game of Thrones world, we have to realize that The Expanse is being written and positioned that way. We have to watch the show in that way, and it kind of makes it hard to watch this show an episode at a time, an episode per week.
Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely see that. I think that if we kind of think of it in terms of the different arcs, it probably helps clarify a few things. But, like, let's talk about Amos, because I really want to talk about Amos. So this whole storyline, we've not seen sort of Amos without his Jiminy Cricket of Naomi, right? Like, Amos by himself, right? We got a little bit of it when they were mad at each other, right? Well, not really mad at each other, but when she said she didn't trust Amos. And that, you know, they had a little falling out, and I think that was season three, right? And then they sort of resolved that. But now we have Amos by himself, and Amos is going to go take care of basically all we know of is this person who took care of him, okay, as a child. That's all we know at this point. And
I thought she was dead.
Yeah, she died. Take care of her affairs. Yeah. Sorry, take care of her affairs. Sorry.
Right.
And
that's important context because that foreshadows that somebody killed her, and we know Amos is super about violence and justice. So that little bit of line is heavy foreshadowing that he's going to go down to Earth and he's going to get in some shit. He's going to get in some fights. He's going to kill some people. Yeah. And I also have to ask, is it intentional that the writers said it in Baltimore? Because they mentioned Baltimore in the episode, and Baltimore being one of the most violent cities in America. Is that intentional?
It's definitely in the backstory of Baltimore. Yeah, it's definitely intentional that it's Baltimore. All right, so you're almost on the mark. I don't want to give any spoilers for you, Justin, but you're almost on the mark. What I want to talk about that foreshadowing, which will help clarify it a bit, is I love this whole sequence of him sort of saying, oh, I'm not going to pay. And you might think he's doing this out of, maybe he's learned a lesson from Naomi or Holden. And he's going to protect the nice gay couple, right, in the cabin with him. That's not it at all, right? If you know Amos, you know why he's doing it. And what I mean by that is he is putting back on his armor. He's putting back on this almost sociopathic behavior, right? Like, we know he struggles with this, right? And he's like, I'm going back to Baltimore. I have to behave more like an animal, right? What's that?
Suit up.
Yeah, suit up. Exactly. So, you know, well, ironically, by taking off his clothes and taking a shower, right? And beating those people half to death. And that is what he's doing, right? And that's such a, what a great visual storytelling, right? Like an action sequence storytelling, right? Like, without even talking about psychology and, like, you know, oh, I mean, you could have just done that with a line of dialogue, right? Well, oh, I've got to steal myself and, you know, I got to turn back into the animal I didn't want to be, right? No. He's just like, you just see it. In typical Amos fashion, you just see it in his actions, right?
Are you trying to rewrite the episode as if Joss Whedon wrote it? Insert quippy line of dialogue where he admits he can't be vulnerable.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's just do that for the whole season. Every episode, how would Joss Whedon have fucked this up?
Yeah. Well, but it makes sense, doesn't it, Justin? I mean, it's a beautiful sequence that I think you'll see. We'll be referring back to it as we go in future episodes about...
Well, let me ask you. Everything you said is great, but then ultimately, why does he do it? Does he do it because he doesn't want to pay and they just lucked out? You know, that nice couple just lucked out that they don't have to pay either? Well, what is his purpose in doing it? He needs to assert his dominance. Is that why he's doing it?
I think let's revisit that as we go forward in episodes. That's why I wanted to lay this foundation while we're discussing episode one, because I think this ambiguity of has Amos changed since Baltimore is important. And what changes have happened to Amos?
I mean, look, I'm going to speculate, okay? I'm going to speculate based on my knowledge of writing, based on my knowledge of characters. And I'm going to say the entire point of the season for Amos is going to be that he never changed to begin with. It was just he was never as sociopathic as people think he was. And maybe. I mean that because he's saying he has to go back to settle the affairs of this woman who helped him somehow. That's not something a sociopath does. And that's said in the same episode that he's protecting these people from being fucked over. So it's going to be that he's always had some sort of moral code, and we're going to learn what that moral code is.
Right.
But I think this season is largely about redeeming him in the audience's eyes. Not that I ever thought he needed redemption, but showing he's not a sociopath.
Yeah, I think it's all about providing that depth of, like, why is he this way? Why does he struggle with the moral distinctions that he struggles with? And why is he so decisive in other areas, right? Like, and how that plays out on a moral side. I think it's going to be fascinating as we go forward.
And so, again,
I think Amos has always been the most fascinating character to me, not just himself, but also just how it's been acted and then his interaction with other characters.
See, that's really interesting to me because Holden's the most interesting character to me. And it's there was a scene in this episode that really showed how Holden is so interesting to me because it was the most powerful scene. Well, no, I want to finish this up first because I think there's another moment with Amos in this episode that shows the overall theme of the season, which is related to this. But to finish up on Amos before we go to that scene with the former president lady, what's her name?
Ava Sarala.
Right, Ava Sarala. Did I say that correct?
Close enough.
All right, I don't even know character names, honestly. She's just the badass woman who was in 24. That's how I know her. When she's on screen, I'm like, oh, she's a badass, and she was in 24. I don't know her name. But, no, I think Amos, to me, always, it's he does not like people who are unnecessarily brutal to people who are weaker than them. Because he sees it as... And this is, again, I don't know any spoilers or anything. This is just me, how I've interpreted his characters. He sees that as a violation. He sees that as a violation because it's easy and you don't need to do that. And knowing he's the strongest person around, he really takes that seriously as a responsibility, not to protect the weak, but to hold these people accountable for preying on the weak. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
That's how I've always read Amos. Now, we'll find out if I'm right at the end of the season, but that, to me, that plays with the whole, I have to, take care of this woman's affairs. I have to take care of, I have to protect this gay couple, right? Because these people who are stronger than them, stronger in the sense of they had the power structure on the ship, right? We're using that to exploit them.
Would you say they had ship privilege?
Yeah, they completely had ship privilege, right? They had, do we want to say ship or do we want to say like property privilege, right? They had the property of the ship, which gave them their
down
privilege,
with the
right?
proletariat.
Right. And again, he's not fighting that battle, right? He's not fighting that battle and he's not fighting a battle against privilege. He's fighting a battle against this is unnecessary. You have what you need. You're just doing this for no good fucking reason. If people have a good reason, and this is when he gets conflicted, when he's put in a situation where people have a good reason and both sides have a good reason and he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So that scene, the scene with Ava Sarala, did I say it right?
Ava Sarala.
All right, whatever. It's a woman from 24 who's a badass. So, I put this is one of the quotes I put in the Discord, channel Expanse Watch Party, where they're talking and they're trying to, they're just catching up, which is sort of weird to me because I don't really remember them being friends. And I was like, where are these two friends?
Okay. Well, there was the high heel scene, right? He taught her how to walk in mag boots. And that's why that joke happens at the beginning, because if you remember, she was like, I've never had to wear these. And he's like, it's just like walking in high heels. And she's like, what the fuck do you know about walking in high heels? And he was like, I wasn't always a mechanic.
Yeah, which was foreshadowing, which is why they brought that back now. So that makes sense from a literary standpoint.
From a literary standpoint, okay. This is important to remember that he did used to walk around in high heels.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't make that explicit connection. I just meant bringing her back as the one he confers with before he goes back to Earth.
No, I have to spell this out for you, Justin? Remember when we were in the when we first visited Tycho Station? He was very interested in how the whores were being treated.
I mean, I think he was a pimp, personally. I mean, if I had to guess.
Wrong.
All right. Some sort of illegal activity that we would consider illegal. All right. Well, let's not go down this path. So the scene culminates, or there's a scene in here that this is how it culminated in my mind. She said to him in her, her way of saying it, right? She said, you don't keep up on current events, do you? And this is how you know she's a good actress, because you can hear her say that in your head, right? You can hear it. I'm not doing it justice, but you could hear her with her accent and everything. And then he replies, only the ones that I can do something about. Now, first of all, that jives with what I was saying my interpretation of his character is. Right, he doesn't care about everything. He cares about, like, this is what I can do something about, and this is how I can make the world more just. But at the same time, I think throughout this episode, there was a foundation being laid. And this is why I have to be careful, though, because this could just be my own values. I'm projecting my own values onto the show. But there was this foundation being laid of, we don't have to worry about saving the world anymore, saving the universe anymore. We have to worry about what we can control. Because the first three seasons were all about like, we have to save the entire universe from the proto molecule. And Holden is starting that again, right? He's starting that when he goes to, Tyrese from The Walking Dead's character's name?
I don't know.
What are we, the guy... The guy who's not with the Belters, but he's part of the Fred Johnson.
Fred Johnson.
What's the group he's in? What's the group he's in?
He's Medina Station.
Right, he's in Medina Station, but there's the military group he's part of. What is it?
Let's see. Why are we quizzing me on all these things? He is part of the Belt, right? Like he's part of. I forgot what clan he's in.
Yeah, there's a specific clan that I can't remember the name of. Anyway, he starts with that, where again, he's where he's like, you have to destroy the proto molecule, as if he's the, as if Holden's the arbiter of the universe. Holden gets to say, hey, Fred, you and your group, you don't get to have it, because I'm the arbiter. I'm responsible for the entire universe, right? And that's what I started to see here with that.
OPA. I think you're thinking of the OPA. Sorry, I jumped way too down low. I was like, oh, I forgot what clan he was with, but you mean the OPA in general.
Right, OPA. I didn't know there was clans in the OPA. I just met OPA.
Yeah. That,
the OPA has possession of the proto molecule, correct?
So Fred Johnson and the OPA control it. Between Fred and the other guy, the guy who killed the first officer dude. Man, we're sucking at the names. Dawes. Dawes and Fred are the two main players in the OPA.
Okay. So anyway, that was the overall theme I saw starting to be developed there. There was one other point where I saw coming up, but let's talk about the scene that moved me. Like I was legitimately moved in one scene in this episode, and I think it works thematically as well, where Holden was talking to Naomi, and Naomi's telling him about her son. And Holden's like, oh, well, do you want me to go to where you are? And she's like, no. And then he says, you know, do you want me to go with you? And she's like, no, I got to do this alone. And my heart broke for Holden, right? Because one of the main things for Holden in this show, and this is why I find it more compelling, and maybe this is just, I find that compelling because it's a personal thing for me, but he's almost been trying to find a home, right? He didn't belong anywhere. He was sort of exiled in the beginning, wasn't he?
Yeah, definitely. And he's made this home, right? He's made this and you know, this family, right?
And with Naomi, who was an outlier on her own, right? Because she was a Belter, but she wasn't really a Belter. So they kind of bonded over that. And now she has this like really important thing going on with her, and she's shutting him out. Like that literally broke my heart, William. Like it made me want to cry. Like I was close to tears. Like that was painful to watch.
But this is something that in this case could have been done like in a very melodramatic fashion, right? Like she could have just disappeared or whatever. But instead it was like, hey, we're going to have this moment. And I think the actor that plays Holden played it so well, right? You can see those emotions go through him where he's like, I've had that one thing, right? And now she's having that one thing, that thing from her past that she has to face on her own, right? And you can see his heart breaking that, like, I cannot be there for her, right? And even in the, like, just to make it, like, super concrete, I mean, in the books it's more clear that there's a obvious size difference between the Belters and the Earthers, right? But Holden is like, first of all, he's famous. He's clearly an Earther. He could not go into this, you know, this den of like OPA, like deep tribal, like stuff, right? Like he just couldn't do that, right? And so it makes sense, like in a way, rationally, right? But then also emotionally, she's like, I don't want you to be drawn into this, right? And I'm not saying I'm not going to spoil like whether it's a mistake or not, but like, it's understandable and it's all communicated.
I haven't seen it, but I'll spoil it. Smash cut to, it's a mistake.
Is it though? We'll see. So this guy is super dangerous, right? This guy
wasn't a what?
This guy is super dangerous, right? The person who's the father is super dangerous, and we find out that it's Inaris, right? The guy who's doing the whole asteroid thing.
Right. So I want to ask you about that in a second because that was very confusing for me. But yeah. I want to say I didn't read in all the Belter stuff. Like I just read in like what was heartbreaking for me was her shutting him out. And yeah. being like, I have to deal with this on his own. I didn't even deal with it on her own. I didn't even process it as he was processing what was going on. It was just heartbreaking to him to be shut out, is how I read the entire scene. Yeah. I mean, maybe that changes the context later on when they have other conversations in the season. I don't know. But for me, it was just watching, like, here's a guy who... I mean, let's be serious. Out of everyone, Holden sort of has the least plot going on right now, right? His plot was yell so at far. Fred yep. and yep. then, you know, try to talk to Naomi. Where Naomi is going after her son. Amos is going after whatever his quote-unquote familial past is. The pilot, Alex, is his name, correct?
Alex, yep.
Yeah, Alex is trying to connect with his family. So they're all going out and trying to connect with people, and then Holden's kind of like left on his own. Ironically, he's lost his family, yeah. right? So that was what I was experiencing for Holden. It wasn't all the other stuff you were talking about.
Yeah, makes sense. So what's your Marco Inaris question?
Okay, so at the beginning of the episode, right, there was a Belter ship attacking a science vessel, right?
Yeah.
That's supposed to be the terrorist arm of the Belters, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think they're really, like it's showing awesome villainy, right? It's showing awesome villainy, yeah. right? And I don't mean to say the villainy is good. I'm just saying it's an awesome portrayal of villainy. Now, this was written in the past. This was already made. But with everything that's happened recently with Palestine and Israel, it's kind of interesting. I don't know if people are going to get mad at them about it because people could read that into it if they wanted to be jerks. So that'll be interesting. But my question is, at the beginning of the episode, the dude who blew up the ship, right? Was that Naomi's son?
Yes.
Okay. Is he in charge or is he being told what to do?
He's being told what to do by his father, Marco Inaris.
Okay, and who was shown at the end of the episode? Was it Marco Inaris or Naomi's son?
Marco Inaris, yes. And Naomi's son, okay. I think, too, but Marco Inaris.
All right, I would like to see, just visually, I would like to see, and maybe it's just because I'm not remembering last season, but I would like to see just more interaction between the two of them, just so I can get a better distinction of their personalities and what they look like, just so I can, in my mind, know. Do you get what I'm saying?
I think you will. We will explore that in future episodes, definitely.
Okay, because Marco Inaris, I mean, even in the name, right? He seems kind of like Hispanic or Italian, right?
It's the belt, so it's very much a mixture, right? Just like Alex speaks fluent Texan, right? And he's like
right.
some ambiguous Southeast Asian slash, you know, whatever.
Right, but I'm just saying that. You know, he's that, and then Naomi obviously has some black in her background and some English in her background. So I'm just very confused about who is who at this point. Yeah. So, okay. I have another quote in here. I forget where it's from. Maybe you can remind me. There was a scene, and it was about how you need to stop focusing on the end of the world and focus on building something. I think it might have been Alex and the Samoan girl on Mars. Am I right?
Yeah.
That's the scene?
Maybe. What was the quote?
What's the Samoan girl's name?
Man, why am I blanking on that?
This is the Justin doesn't remember any characters in the Expanse's Jesus. Names episode.
I know. But anyways, what does Alex say to her?
It's all about, you know, you need to build something. And he tells her, you know, because she's kind of lost, right? I mean, part of why I didn't really enjoy last season is the whole season was about her being lost, right? And right. she was trying to, like, protect her nephew, and she was trying to find all these conflicts to get into. And now this season, it seems like she's looking for something similar, and she's likewise untethered, and she's talking about how terrible Mars is and everything. And he tells her, and I believe this is her, him telling her that, correct me if I'm wrong, he says, you're not responsible for the world.
Yeah.
Was that this scene?
Yeah. Yeah, you're not responsible for the world. Yeah, yep.
Right. And his whole point was, you need to move beyond this idea of being a savior, of fixing everything, right? And this is similar to Holden, right? This is similar to Holden trying to, you know, don't you destroy the proto molecule. You must destroy it. I am the arbiter. It's the same thing with her. Who made Bobby? Bobby's her
Bobby,
name.
Yeah.
Who made Bobby the arbiter of Mars? Who made Barbie?
Barbie.
Bobby. Who made Bobby the judge, jury, and executioner of Mars? Who was like, you're the conscience of Mars, Bobby? And I get it, you know, she had
she believed in the ideal, right?
She believed in the ideal, and she was empowered by the
she was betrayed. She was betrayed by her ideal, or by her government, right? Remember the whole thing where she ran out of the Mars embassy and over into the UN side during the trial? Or during the,
yes.
Because that was her saying, like, hey, I choose the ideal, this idea of Mars, over what these assholes are doing, right?
Right.
And so she still believes in that ideal, and I think she feels, not responsible, but she feels like an obligation to, like, figure out what is going on here. Why is this, you know, why are all these weapons leaving, and what's going on? Like, this is dangerous. This is Mars, she feels like she can do something to protect the world from this disintegration of Mars.
Right, which is itself a microcosm for the entire universe, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And look, I agree with all that, but I was also pointing out that the lady from 24, that I can't say her name.
Avasarala.
What's her name? That she empowered Bobby. Because remember that she brought Bobby on her team and told her how good of a person she is and how valuable she was? That was sort of what... Because Bobby was a nobody before that, right? She was just like a space marine or whatever. She was like Starship Troopers.
Well, to be clear, to give Bobby's character choices justice, Bobby tried to do it on her own last season, right? And then she found this thing, right, with the whole weapons merchant. And she tried to, like, kind of save him, and it didn't work, right? And she realized they were stealing... They weren't just stealing parts and selling them. They were stealing, like, serious shit, right? Serious weapons of war. And so that's when she decides, who can help me with this? No one in Mars. I can't trust anyone in Mars, right? The corruption's all the way to the top. So she calls Avasarala. Because Avasarala had offered, do you want to work for me? And so she's like, hey, I need a job. And here's what I'm going to offer you, right?
Right. But I'm saying even that job offer was... Even before she called her, right? That was early in the season.
Yeah, that was at the beginning. She was like,
right,
you know.
So I'm saying that moment at the beginning of that season empowered her in her mind. Oh, look at who this awesome, important woman is, and she's telling me I'm that valuable. Oh, well, then I can be, you know, Captain Mars.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I feel like Bobby's kind of independently feels that way, but I think that tips it over into... Like, before, she sort of felt like, I'm here to follow orders and all that stuff, right? And I think, weirdly, it's giving her the power to be more independent, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's ultimately what a lot of this is talking about, right? When we're talking about Alex, you know, trying to reconnect with his family, and Naomi trying to find her son, and Amos going to Baltimore to deal with whatever's in Baltimore. And as I said, that's like a familial connection. They all have to learn how to be independent from these pasts, from their family, in order to build their new family and build a healthier, more rational family. And I think that's part of the overall theme of the season, where it's, you know, it's not about saving the world. It's not about, you know, being heroes. It's about building something. And I don't mean it's about building a family. It's about working towards something you want to produce. And, you know, finding people who share that mutual value with you and make it easier on each other by collaborating to build that thing. And that's why I think that scene with Alex and Bobby was so important. And maybe those two are going to help each other throughout the season. And maybe, dare I say, that we see a romantic connection between Alex and Bobby later on.
Certainly hints of it, right? You know, he finds her attractive.
Well, I mean, how can you not find her attractive? I mean, I've said before, I tweeted a long time ago, whoever cast this show, like, you can tell it's very romantic in its casting because these are not, like, representational people.
Right.
Like, they cast beautiful people on this show. I mean, name one woman on this show who's not beautiful in her own right for whatever type of woman she is. I mean, even the reporter, right? Like, she's just a reporter. You're like, wow, you're good looking. I mean, even the 24 lady, right? For her age, she's gorgeous.
Yep.
So that's definitely intentional. So, yeah, I mean, I think that you can see Alex and Bobby there, and we'll probably see a microcosm there. And then, ironically, they probably all will come together to save the world at the end of the season, or that will lead into season 6 where they save the world together. You know, that they're going to accidentally save the world.
So, yeah, let's zoom out because there's two things we want to talk about. So it's clear from this first episode that this whole asteroids heading towards Earth is the point of this season. Okay, like that's the action point in this season.
Wait, is Armageddon?
Well, we'll see, right? And the whole
I was making a reference to the movie,
the OPA, right? And how and Mars? So Mars is clearly disintegrated. The OPA has this that's creating a some sort of, we don't know exactly how, but that obviously there's a power vacuum. If Mars is disintegrating, then you don't have that sort of three-layer balance, right? And so we've already seen that's having an effect on the OPA with Marco and Ars.
The three layers being Earth, Mars, and the Belters?
Yes. So we see that's out of balance now, right? And everyone's leaving Mars to go to, you know, planets that actually have atmospheres. And
so everyone's leaving California to go to Texas and Florida. That's what you're saying the point of this season is.
And so the OPA is... you know, a faction inside of the OPA senses this power vacuum, right? And is doing something. We don't know what yet. But zooming out even further, we know, like, we have to revisit, you know, what's going on overall in the plot. We know something, you know, we've been hinted at something with a protomolecule, right? Like, we obviously wouldn't talk about it if it's not important. Fred still has it somewhere. We don't know where. And people are thinking about doing science on it again, which scares Holden.
Are you sure this season is not a metaphor for COVID-19? Because this really tracks in my head.
And yeah, so if we, but that gets back to what is the real threat here, right? And, you know, there's the real threat of, you know, we talked about in the last season, Officer Olive was wanting to kind of go slow into this new world for various reasons, but like, what's going to happen, right? Like that's the important thing. Like, we have these threads. That's why I wanted to zoom out. What's these threads of, there's the threat of the, you know, the builders, somebody destroyed the builders, right? The builders of the Ring Gate. We know that from last season. And
it was the gold.
Yeah, the gold came, and Holden talked about that with Fred, right? Like, hey, here's that thing, right? Here's what we saw. Like, we don't. There's something, you know. The protomolecule can still
identify with Holden. Maybe that's why I identify with Holden, because he's like, hey, obvious thing going on that nobody's talking about. Hello,
why are we so worried about all this rings? Other bullshit? Yeah, all this infighting, all this tribalism. When we have this thing that, you know, we don't know anything about, and it could
terrifying
bite us in the ass.
Alien species we know nothing about. Maybe we should figure that out rather than killing each other.
Not just one, you know, but what two. Right? One killed the other, so so we don't know what the fuck is going on. Yeah. So that's why I wanted to zoom out, right? Like, we have a bunch of foundational sort of foreshadowing going on, right? Like, there's, we need to deal with, we, if we peel back the layers, kind of summing up, I think we're reaching the end here soon. It's kind of summing up. We have this concept of our characters have gone through a lot. They've gone through a lot of trauma, and now they're trying to face their past, right? They have to face their past in order to move on. That's one layer. And we pop up the layer. There's this power vacuum, right? Mars is falling apart. Clearly something's wrong in the OPA if you have this terrorist faction about to do something that's obviously not sanctioned by the OPA. And it looks like maybe those are connected somehow, because obviously that's the stealth technology on the asteroids are clearly Martian, right? They're the ones with stealth tech. So something, somehow that's connected. And then we have Avasarala sidelined and Earth being just, you know, Earth. And we're going to find out, you know, what's going on Earth, obviously, because we're going to Baltimore. I mean, first of all,
that's where we want to go to figure out what's going on.
Baltimore is the city that reads. So,
is it?
That's a super old mid-side callback. It's the city that reads.
Maybe the city that Ed Reed had played in. Is that what you mean? The city with
No,
Reed?
The park benches all say America's Greatest City, I think, or something, some variation of that, or the city that reads. So that's kind of like where we are after the first episode. So,
I mean, I got nothing else. I mean, that's a pretty good summary of everything. That helped me figure some stuff out. That helped me see sort of the broader context, which is appreciated. Because I think maybe the reason I get sort of lost in all of this is I focus more on the characters.
Yeah.
And I focus more on, like, what are their individual plots. And like I said, I look for the overall theme. And, I mean, we'll end with this question. Do you think I pulled out things that are just my own biases and my own philosophies and my own values projecting onto the show? Or do you think I pulled out legitimate parallels between all of the plots?
I think it's a little mixture of both. I think after the third episode, you're going to have more concretes to feed into your crystal brain, and you'll be able to, I think, project further out. Right now there's
crystal brain.
Yeah, there's more threads and more details, but as those start to come together and we start to see the consequences of some of the choices people have made, then I think it'll be interesting. You'll be able to draw more about what the theme of this season is.
I like the comparison to Adam Carolla there, calling me a crystal brain. That's what Dr. Drew says to Adam Carolla. And the secret for that is, and I will tell you all the secret, is actually a comment Dr. Drew made recently on the show with Adam, where he called him a pattern seeking missile. And that's what it is. It's just recognizing pattern. It's just pattern recognition. That's all it is. That's,
yep.
If you want to know the clue, if you want to know the trick to literary analysis, it's pattern seeking. That's all it is. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Lanzeski, reminding you that if things get tough, remember, you're not responsible for the world.
I'll lead an effective strategy to mobilize true and international effort to pressure.
Don't forget to join our Discord, join the Expanse Watch Party. We guarantee not to spoil any future episodes of Season 5 in there, but we will spoil all previous seasons, so catch up if you haven't.
William won't spoil anything. I mean, he promises. I don't promise anything. I haven't seen anything, so I can't. how was that Biden clip relevant?
Well, I figured we had one world leader, Avasarala. We might as well have another world leader on the podcast.
All right, fair enough.